In the previous episode of Wrecking the Toy Department, where we don't just stick to sports because we don't have the privilege of doing so, we reflected on the joyful memories of my first 2+ decades as a Chicago White Sox fan. On an early September night back in 1983, my babysitter let me stay up well past bedtime to watch them throttle the California Angels 11-0. A week later, I watched as the fans in attendance, many probably drunk, hopped the walls and stormed the field to celebrate the winning ugly White Sox, clinching the American League West Division title for their first playoff berth in 24 years. If you want to know why sports fans so rabidly, wildly cheer for what is effectively laundry, the last two sentences I uttered are the seeds of the reasons why. Memories, fun, excitement, joy. It's the release of dopamine to watch your team play. If you haven't listened to it yet, I highly encourage you to go back and listen to part one of this trilogy first. Please leave a review wherever you get your podcasts and share the episode or the entire series with your friends. Tell them good things. The podcast is smart, funny, thoughtful, insightful. The host can tell a story about sports that non-sports fans can relate to. And one thing a non-fan can relate to is not caring about a professional sports team, as well as to hating something you used to care about a lot, or even love. Welcome to part two of our trilogy, A Love Story, How I Came to Hate the White Sox in Three Parts. The falling out of love story I'm experiencing with my first love. The White Sox of the 2020s are a train wreck. The kind of dumpster fire driving on only the rims down the highway tire fire that you have to see to believe. But once you do, your neck will hurt for weeks because you couldn't stop staring. It wasn't supposed to be this way. In fact, entering the 2020s, the Sox looked like they'd be perennial contenders, and likable ones at that, fronted by an up-and-coming star shortstop, Tim Anderson. After years of mediocre teams, Anderson single-handedly made the White Sox relevant again in 2019. Against Kansas City, he flipped his bat in exuberant celebration after hitting a home run off Royals pitcher and baseball police sergeant Brad Keller. When Keller beamed him in the next at-bat, Anderson, who's black, swore at Keller, who's white, calling him a weak N-word. When Major League Baseball suspended Anderson for a game for his part in the confrontation, this was his reaction in an interview with MLB.com's Scott Merkin.
And a lot of confidence, and like I said, man, we're going to flush that and keep going.
Anderson's teammates, many of them native Spanish speakers, rallied behind him. It may not have shown up in the 2019 division standings, but that moment spurred the White Sox run from also-ran to contender. When Anderson decided to kneel before the national anthem on opening day of the pandemic-shortened 2020 season, his manager Rick Renteria, coaches Daryl Boston and Joe McEwing, and teammates Jose Abreu, Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, Edwin Encarnacion, and Lucas Giolito knelt with him. Interviewed afterward, Robert said this through an interpreter, quote, "I saw my teammates kneel down. I saw that in other games. Then I thought it was the right thing to do. That's why I did it," end quote. From Giolito, quote, "I think us as baseball players, if we have something we believe in, we have something we want to continue to keep in the public eye, then it's our right to be able to say that, whether it be peaceful protest or conversation, I'm all for that." For me, that's what Colin Kaepernick started years ago, just continuing to keep that conversation going. I think that's important. For change to happen, there has to be disruption. Disruption from the status quo. That's what I believe in. End quote. This is what Anderson said in his post-game press conference about why he knelt during the anthem and his teammates and coaches' support of him.
We're going through something that, you know, the world needs to change. Definitely, you know, an emotional moment. You know, try not to shed too many tears, you know, because we're going through something that, you know, the world needs to change. But, you know, it speaks a lot of the guys that, you know, that was right there in my corner. You know, I am the only black guy, so it's only right that I had to show my love, I had to support. But, you know, for them to be right there beside me, you know, it speaks a lot of them. You know, we all brothers and we all love each other. You know, we had a team meeting. It was definitely open. You know, and I just stressed to the guys, you know, whether you kneel or not, you're still my brother. We're here to win. We're here to have fun. We're here to enjoy the moment. And for the guys that kneel, man, and, you know, it's just all love. And in this locker room, we try to be the most understanding from top to bottom and understand what guys are going through and understand, you know, certain moments. But, you know, each and every one of those guys support, you know, my decision.
The Sox, a spectrum of nationalities, American, Dominican, Puerto Rican, Cuban, Mexican, Nicaraguan, and Venezuelan, led by a Black All-Star who'd finished 7th in AL Most Valuable Player Award voting, were the feel-good story in sports back in 2020. 52 games into a 60-game season, they were running away with their division and had all but sewn up their first playoff appearance in 12 years. Then, the wheels started falling off. Bad luck, poor in-game managerial decisions, and the Sox fell from first place to third in their division. And rather than rolling into the playoffs as favorites, they limped in as the last wild card and were promptly brushed aside by the A's in 3 games in Oakland.
It was just the start of something. I think it was a good for us to get in. Guys got a taste of it, and I think it's just going to make them more hungry, you know, to get back there. You know, it's a tough one to swallow, but we got to keep going. You know, it's just the start of something that, you know, that could be great.
Even Major League Baseball, which can be notoriously incompetent at marketing its own product, realized what it had now in the White Sox. This was the team to promote, and so, as they planned for the 2021 season, MLB decided its first ever Field of Dreams game, played at the field in Iowa where the movie was filmed in 1989, would feature the White Sox. And on August 12, 2021, we got Yankees versus White Sox in an Iowa cornfield, framed by the most beautiful sunset a Midwestern sky could provide. And the added bonus of Anderson promising his teammates a home run into the cornfield during pregame warmups.
I'm trying to put one in the corn, baby, first pitch.
With a runner on and one out in the bottom of the ninth, Anderson came to bat with the White Sox trailing the Yankees 8-7. He did just what he said he was going to do, launch a Zach Britton pitch into the Iowa sky, where it landed in a cornfield for the game-winning 2-run homer. This is what Anderson had to say about the walk-off shot.
Pretty cool moment, you know, all around. You know, being able to walk it off is definitely, you know, one of my best moments of my career for sure.
The following afternoon, Fox Sports play-by-play announcer Joe Buck, who'd called the Field of Dreams game, had this to say about Anderson on Chicago's 670 The Score's Parkinson Spiegel show.
I think Tim Anderson should be the face of baseball. I really do. I think he's everything right about the game. He's all energy. The guy plays his tail off. He is awesome. And for him to step up in that moment to represent the White Sox and to walk it off like that on that kind of a stage, I mean, those are little things that happen along the way that turn into bigger things. And I think baseball's got to latch onto him even more. I just think he's everything that this game should be celebrating.
But beneath the shimmering surface of how awesome Tim Anderson and the White Sox appear to be, there was trouble looming. Problems that had been brewing for nearly a year, going back to the team's awful finish to the 2020 regular season and swift exit from the postseason. Danny Parkins, afternoon co-host of The Score, had seen it coming. Entering the 2020 playoff series the Sox would eventually lose to Oakland, this is what Parkins had to say about then-manager Rick Renteria's job security.
I wonder how far they have to go this year for me to feel very confident that he's back. Because I think he could win a playoff series, and I still would question it. This team is so talented. You don't want to have the question mark be your manager once the game actually goes off. If I had to bet on it, I'd bet on him not managing.
Parkins had it. According to the team, the Sox and Renteria quote-unquote mutually agreed to part ways. However, Renteria had been castigated online and in the media for questionable decision-making during the team's season-ending slump and Game 3 exit. So, for the 2021 Sox to take the next step, they would need a smarter baseball manager. Hall of Fame baseball person Tony La Russa, who at that point hadn't managed a major league game in 10 years. Here is a hint that the White Sox were going to make, and did indeed go on to make, the wrong decision in hiring its manager for the 2021 season. It's owner Jerry Reinsdorf speaking at the Milken Institute on May 1st of this year, explaining his business credo as the owner of a Major League Baseball team.
The first week I was in sports, somebody said to me, if you listen to the fans, you'll soon be sitting with the fans. And so you can't allow your decisions to be guided by emotion or what you think people want. At the same time, you have to consider what the fans are thinking or they're not going to buy your tickets. There's a tendency among owners to think they know more than they know. Because almost everybody who buys a team has been a fan. And of course, the fans absolutely know that they can run a team better than anybody.
Of course. Owns it.
So when you buy the team, you got to get that out of your head. If you think that you know more than your general manager or your head coach, then you've got the wrong general manager. And what you really want is you want people in all of the positions to be better at their jobs than you are. And sometimes you just have to bite your tongue and have faith. And if you don't have faith, then get somebody else. But you can't make the decisions for your baseball people or your basketball people or your football people. You've got to let them make the decisions.
Yes, that's right. You can't act like a fan or overrule your general manager. Except, of course, when you do. Reinsdorf has publicly said his biggest regret as the White Sox owner was hiring Ken Harrelson, later the team's TV play-by-play announcer, as general manager in 1986, and then letting him fire La Russa. He said he and La Russa had since bonded like brothers, and thus he publicly and determinedly undermined his fun, diverse team and general manager by pushing through the La Russa hire over the wishes and plans of virtually every other person in the organization. Almost immediately, there was a major PR problem when the media discovered that La Russa had been charged with driving under the influence, not his first DUI offense, in Arizona the day before the White Sox announced his hiring. His arrest had come the previous February. So either Reinsdorf, who pushed the hiring through, knew and didn't care enough about the hits he would take to reverse field on or even delay announcing the decision, or somehow had the team do so little background work on La Russa so as not to know about the arrest. And thus began La Russa's second stint as White Sox manager.
I begin by saying that I brought this on myself. I know it. I feel deep remorse and regret over what I did. It's impossible, actually, to explain how daily and deeply this gets at you and has bothered me for a long time. Obviously, I displayed bad judgment that night in February. I am grateful for the White Sox for standing by me. Even though this happened before they hired me, I really feel like I let them down and many others, my family, friends, and I think starting out in Chicago, I've let the fans down. I think about fans in Oakland and St. Louis. Many of them became friends. And now starting again in Chicago, it's not the way I wanted to start my relationship the second time around.
This apology sounded alarmingly like the one La Russa had made in 2007, the first time he was charged with DUI. Back then he said, quote, "Last night's situation is the opposite of feeling good. It was an embarrassment, so I apologize to anyone who's close to me. Members of the Cardinals organization, fans, I regret it. Take responsibility, and I'm not sure there's anything else I can say." End quote. Fast forwarding back to 2020 and comparing the two apologies now, how much responsibility was he really taking for his actions? And how much did it really matter?
With a DUI, I'm also a Hall of Fame manager. So I think there's so many things on his resume that just overshadow an error in judgment, you know, whether he had a sip of wine or, you know, a couple of glasses of wine. But hey, there's a lot of worse things that have happened out there besides a manager, you know, getting pulled over on suspicion of a DUI.
That's USA Today sports writer Bob Nightingale on NBC Sports Chicago's White Sox Talk podcast, explaining the company line. That looked even worse when dash cam video of La Russa's sobriety test and paddy wagon ride to the station were broadcast on WGN.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G. H I J K L M N I Z M N O P Z Q R S T U V V Z T U V X Y X Z.
Okay, Mr. Larissa, at this time I ask you to turn around, put your hands behind your back for me, okay?
being placed under arrest with a charge of DUI.
LaRussa gave police two breath samples and, according to Jupiter Police, his blood alcohol level registered 0.093, more than Florida's legal limit of 0.08. This is what a dash cam video in the police car recorded LaRussa saying on the ride to the police station.
Let me ask you two questions.
Yes, sir.
The guy on the radio says something about not being cooperative. Is he talking about me?
No, that was okay. Another call.
All right, secondly, there's a difference between being asleep at the wheel and passed out the wheel. Okay. I would challenge passed out.
In the shadow of months' worth of protests against racial injustice and police brutality, the merits of this hire already looked pretty awful. This is how one fan put it, calling it to 670 The Score, followed by Score host Dan Bernstein's reaction.
To me, this gets to the heart of what the Black Lives Matter movement is trying to point out. An old white man gets pulled over for drunk driving and gets, according to the report, argumentative. And what happens? He gets rewarded, in this case by being hired as the next White Sox manager. Now, if a black man gets pulled over for a DUI and gets argumentative, he could potentially get shot.
I hope he appreciates how ridiculously entitled he is, how incredibly lucky he is. There's a lot of things it's good to be, and this has all been pointed out in the wake of all of this. You're damn right it's good to be white. It is also good to be rich. It is good to be famous, and it is good to be well connected. It is good to be well represented when your lawyer is the DUI specialist to the stars, who has worked with all of these judges before and knows the ins and outs of the system. And when you can afford whatever the retainer is and whatever the hourly is, and you've got very powerful people calling in favors for you, it is good to be so many things, and it is really damn good to be Tony LaRussa.
And how were they looking at these issues? From inside an organization that was, in that moment, the coolest team in baseball, in part because it had amassed a young core of native Spanish speakers, led by a black star who the sport's number one broadcaster said should be the face of baseball, a team that coalesced in 2019 around Anderson flipping his bat to celebrate a home run, and then starkly calling out the red-ass Kansas City Royals pitcher who retaliated by beating him, and a year later started its run as a serious contender by very publicly backing Anderson's decision to kneel during the national anthem on opening day 2020 to advocate for racial equality, to take LaRussa at his word, like this.
The Kaepernick thing, I would not allow it on my team because I think respect for this country, the flag, I know what the Constitution says, but I also know you have some rights as an organization. I really distrust Kaepernick's sincerity. I was here in the Bay Area when he first was a star, a real star. I never once saw him do anything but promote himself. And all of a sudden now he's a second stringer and he's got this mission and I just don't trust his sincerity. And even if he was sincere, there's ways to express your belief in some of the issues that face blacks around this country without disrespecting the country you live in or the flag that it represents. Absolutely would not allow it.
I was so upset when the kneel down the NFL, because it's not that you don't have something that you dislike. There's a different way to protest it. When you kneel down, you disrespect the flag, the country, and the anthem. And there men and women are fighting and dying for that. You know, just it's the wrong way to protest. So what I've learned, and I have this eternal debt, which has led to petting vets, can't do enough for them. I still read as much about the military as I can.
There's not a racist bone in my body. I do not like injustice, and I would support exactly what I mentioned. Anything that's peacefully done and sincerely thought of, and especially with an action at the end of it, will not be a problem. I evaluate players' commitment to our team, and based on watching them closely, you can detect the sincerity of when they say, yeah, I'm all in for helping the team. And then you look around and you see that they're not all in. I think you look at actions, you know, words are words. And I would look at actions.
This response flies dangerously in the face of everything it appeared the White Sox were attempting to build on the South Side. Racial makeup, cultural makeup, general attitude. It was, said 610 Sports Radio Kansas City host Carrington Harrison, and 670 The Score hosts Matt Spiegel and Dan Bernstein, an obvious and vicious sideswipe, by owner Jerry Reinsdorf against his front office, particularly general manager Rick Hahn, as well as against his players and White Sox fans.
There's not a racist bone in my body is on every racist person. Bingo. I don't know Tony La Russa's heart by any means, but every racist person I've ever had an interaction with has always said there's not a racist bone in my body.
He gets a chance to right that wrong, and that desire for Jerry Reinsdorf to play with his toy as an owner supersedes the vision of the executive he's put in charge, supersedes the good vibes, babe, of his fan base, which has come to love this team and love what they represent. That fan base, almost to a man, feels insulted.
In the end, Tony was the choice because it's believed that Tony is the best man to win, help us win championships over the next several years and usher us into what we expect to be a very exciting phase for White Sox baseball.
Oh, that had to be hard. It is believed. The passive voice. Tony was the choice. It is believed that. That is, I mean, boy, that had to be a rough day for him.
All this and the 2021 squad hadn't even yet played its first game under La Russa. Through the middle of May, a quarter of the way through the season, despite everything that occurred prior to the season that would lead one to believe there was a schism coming, the Sox were playing to their expectations and potential. They were in first place and appeared to be real contenders, with a potential Rookie of the Year candidate, catcher, behind home plate. Yermin Mercedes, the 28-year-old Dominican, had, prior to the 2021 season, bounced around between independent league teams, Mexican league teams, and single-A and double-A minor league teams for 11 years. It wasn't until he was 26 years old that he even reached triple-A, a rung below the major leagues. There was absolutely nothing to suggest he could play in the major leagues, let alone be an MLB star. And yet at age 28, having played exactly one major league game, he started at catcher for the White Sox on opening day. This Dominican catcher, with nothing in his prior baseball background to suggest what was coming, had 5 hits and 5 at-bats and knocked in 4 runs. The next night, he went 3-for-4 with a home run. By mid-May, he appeared to be a legitimate Rookie of the Year candidate. Until he stepped to the plate in the top of the ninth inning of a game in which the White Sox were getting set to sew up a 15-4 blowout of Minnesota. Twins catcher Willians Astudillo, who was on the mound because the Twins didn't want to burn any more actual relief pitchers, ran the count to 3 balls and no strikes. Typically, and this was the call from La Russa, the batter will take the pitch. Mercedes did not. He swung away at a 47-mile-per-hour meatball and crushed it into the night to close the scoring at 16-4. The Twins decided that rather than shrugging the whole thing off because baseball is supposed to be fun, they would take offense and go on the offense. The next night, they waited until the 7th inning, Mercedes' 4th at-bat, meaning they had 3 previous chances to do this, to have reliever Tyler Duffy throw a fastball behind Mercedes' knees. Tim Anderson had some words for Duffy and Twins manager Rocco Baldelli, both of whom were ejected from the game. So here we are, the baseball is fun crowd versus the baseball's play the right way police. And of course, reporters are going to ask about this in post-game press conferences. Sox pitcher Lance Lynn shrugged it off.
The way I see it is for position players on the mound, there are no rules. Let's get the damn game over with. And if you have a problem with whatever happens, then put a pitcher out there. That's the way I see it. Can't get mad when there's a position player on the field and a guy takes a swing.
La Russa inexplicably took the Twins side in this, defending the opponents over his own team.
Lance has a locker. I have an office. And at some point, you know, leadership is what you're supposed to represent. And if you ask Lance right now, does he disrespect my opinion? I'll take my chance with his answer. I do not take the bat out of their hands, except on 3-0. And they can add 3 or 4 more, and it gets more painful. When you're already pained enough because you got your butt beat and you're having to use a position player. So I look back, you know, sometimes the more complicated it is, the simpler you keep it. Sportsmanship and respect for the game of baseball and respect for your opponent is not an important priority. Then I can't disagree with you more. I don't care what the more he's changed.
But he saved his real venom for Mercedes, who is, remember, an exuberant 28-year-old rookie from the Dominican Republic who's played less than 40 MLB games in what's now his 11th season in professional baseball. Rich Eisen here now on some of what La Russa said and how he sounded saying it.
Straight out of a Geico commercial, unfrozen caveman manager, tell him to take the take sign, and he swings. And apparently La Russa, as he said after the game on Monday, that I was on the top step seeing that he was ready to swing. He could see it coming, and he was screaming, take, take, take. All he wanted the Twins to know was that he did not like this. And he said he was going to handle it internally. And when Mercedes said, I'm just being me, I'm just playing my game, La Russa basically says, I heard him say that he's playing his game. No, he's not. He's playing Major League Baseball, and he'll respect the opponent.
One La Russa quote Eisen left out there was, quote, I could try and spank him, but he's too big and too strong, end quote. You get the idea. The comments here are absolutely galling, dripping as they are with entitlement and condescending paternalism. They also show that La Russa is the one who's completely clueless. And at this point, it's not yet even Memorial Day, and already it's looking publicly, as 670 The Score's Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi discussed, like he's lost his team.
Your mean Mercedes responded to Tim Anderson, by the way. Tim Anderson, who tweeted, don't see and don't hear, keep pushing 100. Your mean responded, yeah, yeah, brother, and two dynamite emojis. And LaRusso, my luck, they're all lined up behind me. You're getting clowned in real time right damn now. Right now. They're proving you wrong.
It's just embarrassing at this point. And I appreciate LaRusso's frustration and his candor when he says, I don't know why this is still a discussion. I think that that is valid here.
He may legitimately not know.
That he doesn't understand why it's still a discussion.
Prior to his top of the ninth 3-0 home run against the Twins, Yermín Mercedes was having the type of season a Hollywood executive might have said was a bit much had it been submitted as a movie script. 28-year-old rookie Dominican catcher who had, previously to 2021, played 10 seasons professionally at the lowest rungs of professional baseball, except for one major league game, who became a Chicago phenomenon on the South Side and legitimate, though unlikely, contender for Rookie of the Year. After that game, Mercedes' dream season collapsed. In the next 31 games, he had more strikeouts, 21, than hits, 16, in 118 at-bats, and was demoted to the minor leagues at the beginning of July, about 7 weeks after that May home run off the Minnesota Twins catcher. Less than 3 weeks after his demotion, Mercedes posted this message on Instagram, quote, I want to apologize to all those who I inadvertently offended as a consequence of my immaturity, like members of the radio, television, and press. To all the team's members where I was involved with, I'm sorry for failing as a human being and for not accepting some of their decisions. I'm stepping aside from baseball indefinitely, end quote. The post was accompanied with a picture of the words, it's over, all over, and for no good reason. 2 years later, he's back in the Mexican leagues. A return to the majors seems unlikely at this point. In my opinion, this unfortunate and tragic ending to the Yermín Mercedes story can be traced back to Tony La Russa's cruel and completely unwarranted emasculation of him for a moment of overenthusiastic exuberance. That's all it was, not stupidity or cluelessness or disrespect, at least not on the part of Mercedes. Mishandling of Mercedes and subsequent career-altering demotion foretold a lot of the White Sox problems to come. But like an iceberg, 90% of the future issues remained hidden well below the surface. And while they did, the White Sox became the feel-good story of the summer of 2021, cruising to a division title behind their superstar shortstop Tim Anderson, whom Joe Buck had said should be the face of baseball. Come the first week of October, the team was in the playoffs for the second season in a row, the first time in franchise history that had happened, and headed to Houston to play the Astros in the American League Divisional Series. And over the course of 7 days, from October 7th through the 13th, it was like an amusement park parachute drop. A beautiful view at the top, followed by a straight plummet down and a dead cat bounce, before suddenly the ride jerks to a halt, and you're left wondering, what the heck was that?
That is as good a description as I can conjure for the Chicago White Sox 2021 playoff run, as captured here by Chicago's 670 The Score and WFLD Channel 32, and the voices of Score hosts Dan Bernstein, Layla Rahimi, Lawrence Holmes, Danny Parkins, and Matt Spiegel, the Sox broadcast team of Jason Benetti and Steve Stone, and a special guest appearance from White Sox fan extraordinaire, the Kane guy, Rob Holt.
More confident, more concerned.
I feel confident.
I have the Sox winning in four.
I'm super excited to watch this team. The plan is working. They're going to be a playoff viable contender for several more years after this one. And I think they're going to win this series.
I'm worried about the defense. If they play that proverbial clean game, they're capable of taking out any team at any time.
Want to talk about that game yesterday?
Well, only because it's so reinforced that lingering fear that the Sox have been bum slayers.
Correct.
You know, it just started out bad and stayed bad.
You know, those little things is like kind of like stacking pennies. You know, you do little things, it adds up to big things.
Stacking pennies. And when you don't do those things, they often come back to haunt you. He is right. And that's exactly what we saw.
They just, in that ball game, were dominated by Houston in just about every category. If you're going to score one run against the Houston Astros, how many of those games do you think you're going to win?
Friday sucked, and they should not have had everything lined up against them by their own manager. He's 77 pitches in, didn't have it. He's walking around the mound, and he's clearly not comfortable. You don't leave him in to walk two of the first three hitters.
You're so concerned about the next game, you're not managing for the game in front of you.
You got Tony La Russa ostensibly to be the steady hand to put you in the best position in the playoffs, and he was the opposite. It was a complete abdication of duty.
Tell me again about Rick Renteria getting fired for making in-game decisions, and you present to me Friday.
I'm sitting there going, wow, yo. Like, you just, like, just straight up bus-tossed your GM, as saying that he didn't give you someone that you could use.
Like, he bus-tossed the entire team when he said that Michael Kopech should only be used if you have a chance to win the game.
Yeah.
It was a two-run lead on the road.
Yeah.
What am I missing here? And now we're just making excuses for him? 608, you guys are picking apart the things a 77-year-old man says. He obviously is not able to put words together correctly. Then
he's
why is he managing
the White
the
Sox?
Team?
We have him. Kane guy. Rob, thank you so much for the time, and congratulations on catapulting the White Sox to the win in Game 3.
It's a pleasure.
Would you say, Kane guy, that you are more like Moses parting the Red Sea with a staff or Gandalf not letting anyone pass on their way to see the precious? Which one are you
good
more
question.
Like?
More like Gandalf.
What are the powers as it stands? If you could run down the powers that the Kane has. You seem to be able to direct batted balls into specific outfield spots. What else you got?
It does two things. One, I simply tell the batter, you have the power, hit to the gap, put it in play. And then when I switch the cane around so the handle is facing the Astros and I spin it, I just simply say, you are weak. You'll never get on base.
It was probably one of the most exciting events simply because of the attitude. And I honestly think it was a massive cathartic event for everybody.
Will you be at the game tomorrow?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank God. Pray to the gods of variance and hope that sometimes baseball's your way.
I think Carlos has been so good this year that you take a look at his body of work and say, you know what? He's got all the incentive in the world for this one particular game. The only thing that concerns me is command of the slider.
They're down 7-1 yeah, in the ninth. This is how they're going out.
The pitching was not good. The bullpen was not good. The bats did not come alive.
You can post mortem all you want, but you just got beat.
The better team won. The White Sox got their kicked.
I have a lot of things that I would like to say about the White Sox. It'll be great.
The steam lines are rising up from your notes. They fired their manager so they could get smarter, and they got dumber. It's too bad to go out dumb.
This was a multi-system organ failure.
These are precious bites at the apple when you get to the playoffs. And then that happens and you get absolutely pantsed. Be angry about it. You deserve better.
Losing the White Sox right now is like a breakup.
Yes or no, you can answer at the same time. Successful season for the White Sox.
No.
I agree with you.
Yeah, it's a no.
Tony La Russa needs to go. He was outmanaged this entire series, and it wasn't even close. Nobody wanted Tony La Russa in the first place. Rick Hahn didn't want him. Kenny Williams didn't want him. The fan base didn't want him. The only person who wanted him was Jerry Reinsdorf.
They need to do things roster-wise that hamstring Tony.
The window opens,
and then it closes faster than you want to admit.
I really wish that people would stop acting that it's a foregone conclusion that they win the Central next year.
Window that Danny Parkins is speaking of there, that's the opportunity a team has to win a World Series championship. When everything is coming together, the players are at their peak and their shot is right damn now. Next time, we'll conclude this trilogy, a love story, how I came to hate the White Sox in three parts, by examining how the Southsiders squandered their shot to compete for another World Series title, inalterably slamming their championship window shut. Until then, make sure to follow this podcast and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. This episode of Wrecking the Toy Department was written, voiced, edited, and produced by me, Jake Williams. Thank you for listening.